Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Support for coverage of the Utah Legislature comes from the USU Charter Credit Union, serving members with online bill payer and web teller services for around-the-clock account access. Information is at usuccu.org.
Welcome to Access Utah. Later in the program, the Democratic Republic of Congo. We spoke recently with that country's Deputy Minister for Communications. Right now, states' rights at the Utah legislature. There are several bills, at least proposed, I've been reading about. One of those is Representative Ken Ivory's bill, which would challenge the federal government's ownership of land in Utah. I thought we'd explore this whole area with Representative Ivory and with Representative Joel Briscoe. Representative Ivory, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Representative Briscoe, thank you to you.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
You know, if I could, on your lead-in, I would position what we're looking at as children's rights as much as states' rights. You know, we're in a situation where we've got the lowest per pupil funding in the nation, the highest class sizes in the nation, and yet we've got resources to be able to deal with that. And so these are really big issues going forward. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes. Well, let me have you, first of all, have you filed your bill?
Yes, we should have it numbered. My guess is sometime today or tomorrow it'll be numbered and out. We were up actually at Utah State a couple of weeks ago with Professor McNamara and Professor Peacock and talking to some of their classes on some of the things going forward, and love your campus. What wonderful students. We had a great time up there with them.
Yeah, excellent professors you just mentioned there. So what would your bill do?
Well, here's the basics of it. If you look back at the terms of statehood, all of the states west of the original colonies, the promise of the federal government was the same, that they would extinguish title or transfer title of the land, of all the public lands within those states, in a timely fashion. Well, coming up to the eastern edge of Colorado, the federal government honored that promise with all of the states to the east of Colorado, and by the way, to our far west, to Hawaii. Well, the promise to Utah is the same as the promise to those states, and yet we've got more than $2 trillion worth of natural resources in our state, and we've had those things completely tied up, so in terms of the control of our state. So what we do, we simply want the federal government to honor the same promise that it made to all the other states. So we set a deadline. It's been 116 years. We've waited long enough to be last in the nation in per pupil funding. We've waited long enough to have the issues where we're fourth in the nation in bankruptcies and fifth in the nation in foreclosures. We've waited long enough to unleash those sustainability factors and sustainable management of our resources. So what we do is we set a deadline. And this is based on unanimous Supreme Court precedents from less than 2 years ago. We set a deadline and say, look, you've got until the end of 2014 to work with us as governing partners to transfer title of that land to a state public lands commission where we manage open space and access and local control and the sustainable yield of our natural resources. If you don't, in our Enabling Act, the terms of our Enabling Act were: you dispose of the land in a timely fashion, we agree to temporarily suspend our right to tax. If you don't transfer the land in a timely fashion, we resume our right to tax the land, and we tax the land and move forward. You can't have it both ways, where you take the land off the table and damage our children and not extinguish title to the land, as was your duty to honor. So that's the basics of the bill. We've been working with Senator Mike Lee, with our congressional delegation, so that once we pass this deadline, we work hand in hand with them to work as governing partners to work through this issue so that we have the same rights and opportunities, our children have the same rights as opportunities as states to the east of Colorado.
How much federal land would be involved? All of it in Utah?
Yeah, it would be all of it. Now, we take the national parks off the table. We secure and preserve those. We do that much in the same fashion that California did. When they ceded Yosemite National Park, they did it conditionally, on condition that they preserve the right to civil and criminal jurisdiction and service of process, taxation of concessions, certain things like that. So we do it conditionally that the federal government doesn't encumber or sell the national parks. There would be a reversion right if they were to do that. They don't allow them to be persistently in disrepair. Right now they have more than $9 billion in deferred maintenance on the national parks because those come right out of the general fund, and we know what dire straits the federal government is in its general funding. So there's some conditions like that, but we take that off the table because open space and access, that's a critical fundamental part of who we are in Utah. So we manage that by Utahns, for Utahns, actually for all that enjoy this incredible heritage that we have here. But that's a critical part. So the open space and access is a very fundamental part because that's who we are. And so we don't, in fact, we preserve that and enhance that as part of the bill.
Let me turn to Representative Briscoe. What are your thoughts on this bill?
Could I comment initially on the issue of national parks? Representative Ivory's website says that he would be willing to cede the national park land to the federal government on condition that Utah retain rights and control to the subsurface mineral rights. So there seems to be a disconnect between his website and what he's saying now about preserving and enhancing. You know, I taught Constitution for over 20 years to students in high school, and I love these debates. But the Salt Lake Tribune today, professor of law school at University of Utah, said that this constitutional claim is dubious. In my mind, rolling the dice on this legal question is the mother of all constitutional Hail Marys. And I really appreciate Representative Ivory bringing up the foreclosure crisis and the bankruptcy problem we have in Utah. Even if this lawsuit is successful, it's going to take years to resolve. And in the meantime, people's homes are being foreclosed upon. We still have a high unemployment rate. And I believe that we're doing a disservice to the children of Utah by giving them an either-or proposition, which I taught my students to be wary of. Either the federal government comes through and gives us millions of dollars for federal lands or gives us the land so that we can manage it and use it, or we just don't have any money for any of these problems. There's all kinds of space in between. Democrats have a best school initiative. We've got a package of bills that we're proposing, and Senator Ben McAdams has a bill which would reprioritize funding within the state government to generate another additional $50 million over and above growth, over and above the governor's budget, and would generate money going forward. I haven't seen any proposals from Republicans to enhance public schools and to help get us off 51st in the nation of per pupil spending, other than these proposals, which are not likely to succeed, to take federal lands.
If you just joined us, we are talking about a proposed bill from Representative Ken Ivory, a Republican from West Jordan, which is going to be numbered probably today. We'll be hearing about this, of course, which would challenge the federal government's ownership of land in Utah, impose state penalties if the federal government didn't come through. He's framing this as an education issue. Monies from those lands should be flowing to the state, he says. We're also talking with Representative Joel Briscoe, Democrat from Salt Lake City. You're welcome to join the conversation. We hope that you will at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. You can email us from our website, upr.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. You can get comments through to us from those social media sites as well. Back to Representative Ivory, even if this is totally merited on the logic of it and on the case side, would you not agree this is a Hail Mary and unlikely to succeed and expensive?
No, I wouldn't at all. Now, let me just back up. I think it's very convenient when you look at claiming the same promises that were made to other states and then dismissing them as being hard. Of course it's going to be hard. But look at Dred Scott, who stood before the Supreme Court in 1857 and asked the question, am I not a man? And at that time, the Supreme Court said, no, you're not. Fortunately, circumstances changed. Susan B. Anthony in the early 1900s said, why should I not be entitled to vote? And the law, in fact, sanctioned her not being entitled to vote. And those circumstances changed. And so we have some very, very incredible signals from this Supreme Court, unanimously from this Supreme Court, In fact, in the Hawaii versus Office of Hawaiian Affairs case, they made some very, very signal statements. The consequences of admission, of a state's admission into the Union, are instantaneous, and it ignores the uniquely sovereign character of that event to even suggest that somehow subsequent acts of Congress can diminish what's already been bestowed. And then they add this statement, and this proposition applies with greater force and effect where virtually all of a state's public lands are at stake. And so what they're saying is that Congress has no right to change the vested terms, the sovereign terms of our state's Enabling Act. Well, what are those rights of our admission into a state? And again, the same terms in the Enabling Acts of all the other states. The rights were, and the promises and duties were, for the federal government to extinguish title or transfer title to all the public lands in a timely fashion. Now, again, the promises are the same. They kept those promises all the way up to the eastern edge of Colorado, skipped over the western states, then went to Hawaii and kept those promises. If the promises are the same, why are the performance different? Let me give you an example in North Dakota. In North Dakota, they're putting because they have access to responsibly, sustainably manage their resources, because they have access to that, because the federal government honored their promises in North Dakota, they're putting $1.2 billion a year additionally into roads and school infrastructure. They're putting $340 million additionally into classrooms. They only have 90,000 children. We have nearly 600,000. They have 11.6 pupils per teacher. Imagine what education in Utah would look like if we cut class sizes in half. So where we've been taking approaches, and I appreciate my good friend and seatmate, Representative Briscoe, but what we've been doing is we've been taking scarce dollars, because dollars here are always scarce. We take a dollar out of the left pocket, you know, from flexible spending accounts or something else in a budget, put it in the right pocket to the WPU, the Weighted Pupil Unit, and say, wow, teachers, you should feel better. We've been doing that for 10 years because as things exist right now, budget dollars are scarce. The economy is in a very serious shape. But guess what? North Dakota's not playing the recession game. They're not playing the depression game. They're not playing the unemployment game. They're not playing the foreclosure game. They've got 11.6 pupils per teacher in their schools and adding billions of dollars into their classrooms. Are our children not as good as North Dakota's children?
Let me have Representative Briscoe. I'll give Representative Briscoe a chance a little later on to outline any specifics that you would like to see happen with regard to education and some solutions that you feel are more tenable than the solution being presented by Representative Ivory. But I wonder if you would engage on the direct constitutional question and the way the history has happened as outlined by Representative Ivory.
Representative Ivory is correct. We have just been shifting money around and taking money from one pocket to pay another, and that's been under Republican control for the last 10 years. I wasn't elected by my voters to come up here and run a constitutional law seminar. I find this all fascinating. But as we discussed in my appropriations subcommittee this week, the legislature gave $350,000 last year to hire two additional attorneys in the state attorney general's office to prosecute RS-2477 road claims all across the state of Utah. And the attorney general's office said we only have two attorneys in our entire office of hundreds of attorneys to prosecute white-collar fraud claims. And they said those claims, mortgage fraud claims, are staggering, staggering. So I'm going to make a proposal with Senator McAdams that we add $1 million to the Attorney General's office to fight white-collar crime. That's what Utah families need right now, not a $1 million to $3 million cost. We could be putting that money into schools, and instead we're going to be throwing after a lawsuit that renowned constitutional scholars say is the long shot of long shots.
So you don't think this has merit?
I love teaching about Dred Scott. I love teaching all these things to issues, but I came up here on the Hill to help the families who are unemployed in my community and to help public school children. And 30 years ago, when we had less access to federal and public lands than we have today, we funded schools better. So this argument that we're prevented from funding schools because of the federal government is a straw man. And it's a diversion from the real work we could be doing up here, and which we have done in the legislature in the past.
So, Representative Briscoe, you think this will be thrown out pretty quickly?
Well, I mean, this is a constitutional full employment act for attorneys. I mean, a lot of people are going to get into this, and there are a lot of cases pending, but this morning I'd refer all my listeners to this program, to the Salt Lake Tribune, and read the comments by one of the law school professors at the University of Utah. Just to give you some facts here, Utah per capita has more non-federal land than most states. We have 8.8 acres per person that's non-federal land in Utah. New York has 1.6 acres, Massachusetts 0.8 acres, Illinois 2.7 acres. So this notion that we're lacking private and state lands that we can develop and we're being squeezed out by the federal government compared to some other eastern states isn't true, and they're funding their schools better than we are.
Representative Ivory, I know you disagree that there and believe that there are merits. Do you believe if this if it passes, it likely will go to the courts? Do you think this will succeed in the courts?
Well, that's entirely up to the federal government. We set a deadline and say, look, we've waited 116 years for you to honor the same promises you made to all the other states. By the way, we have five states running this legislation at the same time. This was already approved as national model legislation. We've got Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Colorado, and Idaho all standing up saying, look, it's time. We can't wait any longer for you to honor our promises, the same promises you made to the other states. Now, Senator Mike Lee, we've been working very directly with him and with our congressional delegation. So as soon as we set the deadline, we've got a couple of years to work with them as governing partners to say, look, we simply want the same rights that you've done in fulfilling your promises to these other states. So whether or not the federal government chooses to sue us for acting as a sovereign state, as the Supreme Court has signaled we can and should do, that's entirely up to them. But our first step is to act as governing partners, because our children can't wait any longer. Our wage earners can't wait any longer. It's pretty convenient to try to make this a partisan issue when we're simply asking for the same rights for the federal government to honor its promises, to somehow walk over that and say, well, we've got this many acres per people, therefore the federal government shouldn't honor its promises. Well, a certain party hasn't, funding and education, because the economy and the tax dollars have been what it's been, therefore the federal government shouldn't honor the same promises it made to all the other states. You know, I find that really troubling, because we're in a situation where it's simply time to step up. It's time to secure going forward, where $5.2 billion of our $12 billion state budget comes from federal sources. It's federally sourced funds, and a federal government that hasn't had a budget for 3 years, a federal government that overspends by nearly $2 trillion a year, has a nearly $16 trillion debt. We're dependent, very unreliably so, on nearly 40% of our budget. And so this is about education. It's about wage earners. It's about economic vitality. And it's critically about the future sustainability, viability, self-reliance, self-determination of our state. So I couldn't disagree more with my good colleague.
Let me have you respond directly, if you would, and Representative Briscoe has referred to this a couple of times. This is from the Salt Lake Tribune from today in the Utah section. People are looking for that. Bob Keiter, University of Utah law professor, is quoted as saying the Constitution's equal footing requirement, that the courts have interpreted that consistently, that applies to political sovereignty, two senators per state, for instance, and not to lands. I'm guessing you disagree.
Yeah, I mean, you put three lawyers in a room, you'll get seven opinions. So that's Mike Lee, clerk with the Supreme Court. We've got the Supreme Court itself. In fact, Tom, the Supreme Court just last June, this was monumental, just last June, this Supreme Court unanimously upheld a private right of action under the 10th Amendment, that an individual citizen, if the federal government oversteps the powers reserved to the states, an individual citizen has the right to sue under the 10th Amendment. That's the same Supreme Court that issued this Hawaii opinion. They're signaling in very dramatic language that we need to maintain this balance in this governing partnership, this balance called federalism. And so, just like the times with Red Scott changed, with Susan B. Anthony, with Rosa Parks, just as those times change, we're in an era where now we have the opportunity to unleash these resources in a sustainable manner to solve national unemployment problems, to solve national stagnant GDP problems, to solve national deficit problems, we've got the opportunity to do that. Now, some, you know, want to stay back in the buggy whip days and not move forward. I think we need to have the federal government honor its promise and, looking at the headwinds coming, not participate in recessions as North Dakota is doing, not participate in unemployment, not participate in abysmal funding of education. I think we simply have to do that, and chopping up scarce dollars is simply not going to get us there.
Representative Briscoe, you said you probably sum up the views of others in the legislature. I don't know where this all splits out to people who support the position of Representative Ivory and Representative Briscoe. You said you weren't elected to participate in a constitutional seminar, but there are several other bills, it seems, in this same vein. There is some sentiment, not only from the representatives that bring these forward, but from some of their constituents. Should the legislature not respond to that?
What I'm hearing my constituents say is they're tired of sending kids to schools with class sizes too large. Representative Ivory says that that his bill and this whim, it's not a whim, I'll take that back, this challenge, which is a long shot by anyone's standards, will take he's going to give the federal government 2 years to come clean, and then we're going to either sue them or we're going to move into their lands or we're going to start taxing them. We're going to do something to sort of take back these lands. That's when the court challenges will engender, and maybe it'll be done quickly, but let's say a year. So we're 3 years out. And even if we were to get these lands, let's give, you know, the representative the benefit of the doubt that his court cases are successful. If he is successful, he's killing the goose that laid the golden egg. His own website says they want access to the subsurface mineralites under arches, under Zions, under canyon lands, under all the national parks, national monuments. 21 million people come to Utah every year, $1.7 billion, over 20,000 jobs generated by public lands and people who want to see them, you know, unencumbered, who want to see them and ski them and cross-country them and hike them and fly over them and river raft the rivers. I mean, the outdoor retailer show, which I visited a couple of weeks ago and just left Salt Lake City, brings $20 million into the local economy in the winter, and it's not as big as the summer show. I mean, that has a tremendous positive economic impact, and I think you might probably just be able to kiss the outdoor retailer show goodbye if we pass this bill.
Let me just deal with that red herring, if I might.
Go ahead.
What the bill does is it sets up a public lands commission to seed the national parks affirmatively under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution to cede the national parks to the national government, because they didn't go through Article 1, Section 8, 17 in creating them in the first place. So we preserve them precisely for the things Representative Briscoe is talking about. Among the considerations that the Public Lands Commission may consider are reversion rights if they're encumbered, if they're transferred, if they're allowed in disrepair, and perhaps reserving subsurface mineral rights from outside the national parks. Those are some of the things that a Public Lands Commission may consider. Right now what they're doing is we've got borders to the national parks, and now they're saying we want a 20-mile buffer zone or a 25-mile buffer zone. And so that's kind of a red herring that he's throwing up. It's a convenient talking point, but it's a red herring. Let me go back on the constitutional matter as well. Under Article 6 of the United States Constitution, my good friend knows, it says the members of the state legislatures are bound by oath or affirmation to uphold the United States Constitution as critical, fundamental, independent, external check constitutional actors. That's our duty. It's our duty to be the external governing partners in this governing partnership that Madison referred to as a compound republic, that Hamilton referred to as governing partners that would prevent each other from overpassing their constitutional limits, that Thomas Jefferson said, if we allow everything to be drawn to Washington, it'll be as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated. It's, in fact, our duty to do this. It's very convenient to abrogate that and say, I'm going to look at other issues. But this is our duty. This is part of what we are in our system of government. Again, in the Bond decision just last June, the Supreme Court unanimously upheld that in language saying, no, this governing partnership, this federalism, is absolutely inherent to our individual liberties. And so that's our job.
And we just have about a minute and a half left. We began with Representative Ivory. We'll give Representative Joel Briscoe the last word.
You know, Representative Ivory is at some advantage here because he's quoting from his bill, which has not yet been released in public. And I would also like to note that the $5.2 billion of federal funds that benefit our state and come into our state government, I don't believe one budget committee up here in the last week has voted not to take any of those funds. So they decry the funds. They're scared the funds could go away. They say the government is going to collapse and we're going to have to pick this up for ourselves. But we haven't turned back any of these federal funds. You know, there's been an attack on our public lands for years, and I'm dismayed to see all of a sudden this is now about civil rights and rights for children, and it's about public education. States with less land per citizen make education work. This is just a straw man argument that Representative Ivory and his colleagues are injecting. And I think there are better ways of attacking the problems of being 51st in the nation in per pupil spending.
Well, we'll leave it there. Out of time. I'm sure we'll be looking at this argument going forward. We very much appreciate two representatives talking with us today. We've been talking about Representative Ken Ivory's bill, which will be numbered, we believe, today, which would challenge federal government's ownership of land in Utah. And we've been talking with Representative Ken Ivory. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And with Representative Joel Briscoe, thank you to you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And coming up following a break, a Steve Eaton commentary, we'll visit with Jean-Paul Oloa, who is the Deputy Minister for Communications with the Democratic Republic of Congo, a nation that's emerging from years of civil war and anxious to rebuild. That's coming up.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
I think there may be a tiny flaw in the way we choose our president. There seems to be a sizable group of people who believe that perhaps our elected leaders in the nation's capital could, if they really tried, find some real solutions to the problems that afflict us and move this country forward. This group believes that if people with diverse viewpoints put their heads together, they could come up with new ideas, better than those proposed on either side of the aisle. So, the way we find these intelligent people is that we hold a series of debates where they're given the opportunity to demonstrate that they know how to be real leaders because they can effectively criticize and demean anyone who disagrees with them. We test out their leadership skills by allowing them to argue and fight it out on national television. Imagine you're on a long family trip and you become frustrated because instead of it being a memory-building experience, it proves a test of endurance. Your kids won't stop fighting. Nothing works for them, and eventually they start trying to find a way to throw their siblings from your moving van. So you come up with a solution. You tell them that you will pay close attention to their bickering and judge them like they're in a contest. The child who is the most relentless, most critical, and most annoying will get rewarded with all the candy and junk food they want at the next rest stop. I know some of you won't get this analogy. I recently heard a radio commentator mocking the whole idea that anything bipartisan could ever produce forward momentum or lasting solutions. A much more effective approach, he argued, would be to have the party with all the right ideas drive the evil-thinking party right out of office. I suppose that under this approach, any surviving members of the incompetent, narrow-minded party would just have to try to oppose everything suggested and stall until the next presidential election, when they could push for a new 4-year reign of right-thinking individuals. I know it's confusing knowing which is the party that has the right ideas and which party we need to throw out, but that's what presidential elections are for, to help us identify the good guys and the dolts. If President Obama is the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, the Republicans have decided the best way to take the belt back from him is to beat the living daylights out of their best candidate just before the real fight begins. For some reason, that seems like a strange strategy to me. Accepting the fact that some favor a black and white, take no prisoner approach, I still can't understand why negative advertising is so effective. We don't see much of it in Utah because state law stipulates that we all vote for the same party, but I've seen ads highlighted on the evening news. They all use the same guy whose voice promotes monster truck rallies and professional wrestling, and then they level these outrageous charges about the other candidate wanting to kill your puppy, and for some reason this works. If I heard such a commercial and knew everything in it was technically correct, that tone and approach would make me skeptical about the message. Cue the voice. You know the sun comes up every day, but what they don't tell you is what happens 12 hours later when it sets, plunging millions into darkness and despair. Is that what you want from your solar system? Now, I recognize that a race that emphasized the importance of listening, building consensus, and finding new solutions would prove difficult for the press to cover. We have long been taught that if a candidate ever changes his or her mind on anything, they are no longer fit to lead. Such people should not only be thrown from the family van, but dragged behind it. We're unlikely to see a newspaper story start like this. The four remaining Republican presidential candidates shocked moderators, viewers, and their own campaigns Tuesday night when they suddenly pushed aside the podiums, pulled in a table from offstage, and started working together to come up with new solutions that they said would, quote, benefit all the American people. I know that this calm will just spark outrage and that calm, reasonable people will not soon see their ideas implemented. I suggest the only thing we can do is wait until all the wrong-minded, short-sighted, dogmatic people have spent themselves, and then we can see a kinder, gentler, innovative approach take root. In the meantime, I say we do all we can to block them, thwart them, and undermine their approach. Soon, open-minded people, right-minded, intelligent people will take over, and the world will be a better place. There should be no compromise until consensus building is considered the only way to do things. That really is the American way. This is Steve Eaton.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crumb Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we transition from politics to exploration of one of the largest and resource-rich countries in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo, which country you have probably known mostly for its civil war, which ended recently. They're anxious to rebuild now that the war is over. And we're going to talk about security and tourism, the economy, human and natural resources, and hopes for the future with Jean-Paul Oloa, the country's deputy minister for communications. He was recently in Logan seeking to strengthen collaborations between his country and Utah State University. Accompanying Mr. Oloa was Lambert Pungu Okito, who's at Utah State University. You'll hear from him later in the interview. And the interpreter, the translator, is USU student Josh Dallin. So here's that conversation from earlier this week. Thanks for joining us in this part of the program. We're very pleased to speak with Jean-Paul Oloa, Deputy Minister for Communications for the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Minister, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate you being with us. First, why are you in Utah? What are you doing with this trip?
Merci pour votre réception. Ma présence à Utah.
First of all, thank you for having him here today. And he said he's here for first of all scientific reasons, for social reasons as well. He is here because he's heard that Utah State University has a wonderful reputation, and he's heard that from Mr. Pungu, especially in the realm of agriculture. He's very interested in how we study our agriculture, and he is very interested in the sciences that we study here that can be beneficial to him and to his country.
And I want to talk a bit about the agriculture and the economy. But first, I wonder if we could talk about the security situation in Congo. understand the war ended in 2003, but it's my further understanding that fighting still continues, at least off and on, in the East. And I wonder if that's still the case.
Notre pays réellement vécu cette situation de guerre il y a quelques années.
Their country, with that situation, you know, it as you mentioned, the war ended in 2003. They've just recently ended their elections, and so he says that they are in a good situation now, good standing.
No fighting remains?
No, nous n'avons pas de guerre. Parce que comme je l'ai dit,
no more fighting. Nothing in Congo itself.
There were many years of fighting, many problems now coming out of that. I'm sure the government has hopes and goals. And I understand the Congo is very resource-rich. What are the goals of the main goals of the government?
Merci pour cette question. Elle est très importante. En fait, c'est une des raisons que je suis ici. Je vous ai parlé.
He says that right now they are searching to reconstruct the country, and for this reason, it is really important to be in collaboration with Utah State University. So that he had the opportunity to speak with President Albrecht, the president of Utah State University, in order to be able to gain a greater collaboration here, to be able to find. Financially, agriculturally, in those situations, be able to rebuild and reconstruct the country of Congo.
What about natural resources, minerals, extraction? I understand it's very rich in these resources.
Tout à fait. Le Congo a beaucoup de richesses naturelles.
Absolutely. He says you can have, you know, they have a lot of these resources available. He said that it's, you know, as far as that goes, you know, they're very rich in abundance with these. But he said the most important thing is to them at this point right now is the human resources, which is why they are in collaboration with Utah State University, because they cannot reconstruct their country and do the things appropriately that are needed to be done right now if they don't have these important skills that are necessary to do so. He said that, you know, the minerals and things are there, but it doesn't do them any good to have the money and the riches from that if they can't have a stable Congo, if they can't have a stable place where they have these important, as he referred to, as human resources.
I wonder if you would tell me more about these collaborations and what you hope in the future with the University of Utah, Utah State University, other universities.
À cette question, je vous ai parlé tantôt que j'étais reçu par le président.
In response to this question, he spoke with President Albrecht, of course, from Utah State University, and then was in collaboration and returned a report to his minister, who is in agreement with what was said. And he said to just kind of rephrase what was agreed upon. He said that Mr. Pungu is proof that this kind of collaboration, what they are hoping for, is able to happen. Mr. Pungu attended Utah State University and was very very skilled before attending here, but also was able to gain a lot of important information and skills while he was here. He did a lot of research and was able to report back to the people on some important aspects that she learned. He said, in essence, the students and other experts in fields will come here and exchange information. He said, you know, there's a lot of information that they might be able to teach us. And he said, but also a lot of the scientific aspects which they are lacking, he said, would be very beneficial for research and different things for the people of Congo to be able to exercise their different domains and be able to practice those different areas in science and innovation. And I think that that's very important to be able to, he said it's very important to be able to do that. He said everyone will benefit, especially, you know, his people, to be able to come here and to learn and to understand the new age sciences that are happening here, especially in the realm of agriculture and science.
wondering what you, as Deputy Minister for Communications, would like people in Utah to know about your country. One fact, I don't know if it's the case, with Sudan splitting into two, Democratic Republic of Congo may be the largest geographic country in Africa now. What things would you like people to know to change perceptions of your country?
Merci. Je suis très content de cette question. C'est que je veux que la population de Utah connaisse.
Thank you very much for this question, because you'd really like for people to know about Congo. He says Congo is actually the second country as far as its grandeur in Africa, and Algeria is the first. He said that they've just left a war, and now they're beginning to reconstruct. And this is important, because it's a meaning. Reconstruction for them is a new thing. It's a building of a new country. He said Congo is open to everyone now. He says the war is over. It's open to everyone. He says we are open and are content to receive scientific people, scientists, people that would like to come in to exchange and to see who they are. He says they're open to everyone, so that they can really see how we are, not how the radio and the television has depicted us throughout the wars. He says we are welcoming everyone, and we want everyone, whether they're Europeans, Americans, anyone, to come and see what Congo really is, because they are a welcoming people, they are a loving people. And he knows that if people would come and see who they really are, and not who they've been depicted to be, that they would leave with a different understanding. And he hopes that through these exchanges that this will be able to be depicted better for our viewpoint, as well as others.
I just want to ask the minister anything else that you would like to say.
Je ne peux que vous remercier pour cette opportunité.
He says that he really wishes to thank everyone for this opportunity. He says that he'd like to thank Utah State University, who has been wonderful and open to this project, to this idea. He says that he has complete confidence that this will benefit Congo. He says that it's such a great opportunity to have the opportunity to learn from a university in the United States, which is such a great and powerful country, and he knows that that'll benefit Congo so much to have our resources to understand and to learn as they rebuild their country. He says thanks to everyone here. He says thank you especially to Pungu, who has fought enormously to get this collaboration completed. Pungu is, he mentioned, someone who has already contributed so much to this program, because he has been here. He has been able to show the fruits, is what he said, of this, of his labors here, that it's so beneficial and will be extremely beneficial to the people of Congo to come here and to learn and to understand different aspects of agriculture that we may actually take for granted. And he said in closing that he wants everyone to know, especially at this point, that it is an open country to everyone, to students, to tourists, to anyone who is willing to come, and that they would welcome them. And he says, you know, on the internet now and on radio and everything, he wants that to be known. That Congo is a new place, that it is being rebuilt, and that people need to come and experience the wonderful place that it is.
Just two questions, finally. One, you're inviting all to come to Congo, and I'm sure because of the history, people will have probably the top question that they will have is it safe? Can I go to Congo? Is it safe?
J'ai commencé par dire au début ici qu'il n'y a plus de guerre au Congo. Il y a qu'une petite station.
He said that, first of all, he said that he wants to reinstate that there is no more war in Congo. And he wanted to use Mr. Pungu as an example, because he said that he is one of us now. You know, he's here, he's went back, he's toured. He said he went on bicycle, he went on car, he went on plane. He's toured almost everywhere in the country as of late, and we'll turn the time over to him for a moment, maybe to respond on what his thoughts are. But you know, he's an example that he said to prove that everything, you know, is fit for security. He said that there is, you know, safety there, but the reason why these collaborations are wanted is not because they're looking for security or for safety. It's because they want to find a good way to be able to stabilize an equilibrium and advancement with the understanding of agriculture and production. I mean, we're looking at business here, natural resources, international affairs. They're wanting this knowledge and this help that can help them to further that. And so as far as safety goes, he says that you know, you can go anywhere, and it's a wonderful place, and it needs to be depicted as that. It just, the reason that we're having these collaborations are simply to be able to advance a country that is having a rebirth right now after coming out, and it's hard to translate this word, but exiting of a war. I mean, it's almost as if they're coming out on top is how that word would be translated. And so, you know, it's really a new day for Congo.
Mm. Mr. Bungu, did you want to say something?
I understand very well the problem of security that Americans are afraid of going to Congo. But you have to know, first of all, there is American embassy in Congo. Everywhere I'm going, including other countries in Europe, Africa, the first thing I have to do after the hotel accommodation is to go to the American embassy for registration. You have to report. When you go there, they will tell you what to do, where not to go, because they have daily report on the security of every country. If you are in Uganda, they will tell you where you should not go. You are in Mozambique, they will tell you where you should not go. And the American embassy monitor every single detail on the security issue. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Anne was in Kivu. She was in Butembo. She was not worried about the security issue. She came safely, and she's going back June to Congo. Mm. So that should not be an excuse for us, America, to go back to Congo.
Very good. And again, if people have questions, I guess they could contact you for any specifics.
Of course. As Minister Jean-Paul Oloa stated, I'm here to explain more, and I want to secure Americans that Congo is a safe place. You can live and enjoy. Even now, Paul Lau is from California. He lives in my village. I met him. He speaks my dialect with his wife, both of them. He speaks my dialect better than I do. He will never come back to live in the United States.
And finally, this is a question that Mr. Bungu had, a very good question. Minister, I wonder, there are other states, other universities. Why collaboration with Utah State University?
Au niveau international, peut-être que vous ne le savez pas, il est répété de façon positive.
Minister Jean-Paul has said that Utah State was attractive to him because of the reputable and positive international recognition that it has received. He says, above all, in agriculture. He says that he dreams of a day that will be in Congo. They will have a reputable agricultural system like we have here. He said, it is terrific for him to think about that. He says, for that day to come where he would have that opportunity to see that. And he says that he is actually, for your information, going to be leaving to return back for his work actually tomorrow. And the only reason why he's leaving so soon is because he'll be returning in the month of June to complete a 2-month study so that he can learn and live what we are doing here, that he can apply that to his country. And he said he is so excited to learn of agriculture and the sciences and to be able to be a part of that. And he's bringing his family here. And as far as I'm aware, there will be others that will be coming as well to be able to learn these for a two-month process in the month of June, which is so important to him.
Very good. We'll look forward to that return visit. And we have been talking with Jean-Paul Aloa, Deputy Minister for Communications with the Democratic Republic of Congo. We've also talked with Lambert Pungu Okito. He's here at Utah State University. And we promised to give you his contact information. We'll have this up on our website as well, but it's 435-787-1315. 435-787-1315 or pungu55@yahoo.com. That's pungu55@yahoo.com. That'll be on our website if you'd like more information. And translating has been Josh Dallin. Thanks, Josh, for translating. Mr. Pungu, thanks so much for coming in as well. And we especially thank the Minister, Jean-Paul Aloa. Thanks for joining us today for Access Utah.
What I love about radio is the whole theater of the mind concept. You know, you hear a word or a sound and suddenly all of these images start flashing across the back of your brain. What I hate about radio? It's the whole theater of the mind concept. You see, the things that make this medium so wonderful, so cool, can also blow you out of the water, which is why sometimes it seems to take forever to do these simple little weekly essays. While my friends back at the UPR headquarters sit in their nice sound-balanced studios with mood lighting and a control panel with knobs and stuff to help tweak their broadcasts or projects, my little remote studio at Land's End is, well, let's be kind and just call it primitive. All the buildings down here are built with cinder block and concrete. Now that's great if you want to record a heavy metal band at brain-piercing 10,000 decibels of hot white sound, but it doesn't play well with the kind of stuff I do. And surprisingly, sound has this very unique way of penetrating through concrete and cinder block. That's why on more than one occasion, I've wanted to take my laptop and microphone and toss them all over the balcony. We have some lovely birds down here that chirp and sing. We live near a fairly busy street where the cars and trucks make quite a racket as they pass by. There's a guy on a Harley who likes to blast Bon Jovi's It's My Life when he pulls into the complex. And a block or so away, we have some blind roosters who crow not only at the crack of dawn, but high noon, the middle of the afternoon, or whenever else they feel it is appropriate. To top it all off, we live a couple of miles from the airport, and work crews are replacing some of the roof tiles and repainting some of the buildings where we live. That means jackhammers and power sprayers going off for days at a time. And, of course, the airplanes overhead. Once the noise subsides a bit, I lock myself into one of the bedrooms, seek a sound balance, and go for it. But again, the physics of sound come into play, as concrete and cinder make a lot of recordings what they call in the business hot. Hot may be a good thing when describing your significant other, but it's a bad thing when it describes recording levels unless you're Eddie Van Halen. I've tried all kinds of tricks. The bathroom, there's too much echo. A closet, no, for some reason it increases the ambient outside noise. The living space, nah, too big and my voice rattles around in it. Outside poolside, too many margaritas within reach. I'm not sure, but I think there's a law against recording under the influence. Unless you're Eddie Van Halen, of course, blasting the lead riff of Panama through giant amps. Now, I found a little trick that helps somewhat in muffling outside noises and cooling down my voice. Without going into too much detail, let's just say it involves articles in my wife's clothing used in rather unconventional ways. This is Ed Casilia for Utah Public Radio.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.